Now that you've had the opportunity to experience the world above treeline firsthand, prepare yourself for a whole new series of scenic vistas on the way down. To your left, you'll see the Great Gulf Wilderness, a glacial cirque of more than 5,500 acres that was officially designated a wilderness area in 1964. This wilderness classification is especially important as it protects this vast area from any form of man's intrusions. No timber harvesting, mining, or buildings of any kind are allowed. And with the exception of a few hiking trails, only the forces of nature are at work in the Great Gulf Wilderness. But before we continue our story, let us briefly emphasize these important driving tips. For the trip down, the two most important facts to remember are these. First, use low gear the whole way down. This will allow the transmission and engine to act as a brake and help maintain a slow speed. Remember, low gear is usually indicated by a 1 or an L, or L1 on your shifter, or a B if you're driving a hybrid or electric car. Second, don't ride your brakes. A pumping action of the foot pedal allows the brakes to run cooler than does a steady pressure, and never use water to cool your brakes. If they begin to fade, stop at the next pullout and allow them to cool while you enjoy the view. If you're in the fog, please turn on your headlights, and remember that cars heading down should yield the right of way to cars on their way up. While you were on the summit, you might have seen some hikers. Most are day hikers, either out to conquer the highest peak, or traversing the Presidential Range via the miles of trails that crisscross these slopes. Many hikers begin from the Appalachian Mountain Club's headquarters, just south of our base area in Pinkham Notch. From there, visitors get an amazing view into Tuckerman Ravine, world famous for its challenging spring skiing. Its legendary headwall and gullies are arguably the birthplace of extreme backcountry skiing, dating back to the 1930s. Some of the hikers you encountered may be traversing the Appalachian Trail. This famous footpath stretches more than 2,100 miles from Georgia to Maine and crosses the Otter Road on its way. Even for these folks, reaching the summit of Mount Washington is a major milestone on their journey. The Native Indian populations of the area, the Abenaki tribe among others, considered Agiokochuk, as they referred to Mount Washington, a sacred place where the Great Spirit lived. So, legend has it that they never climbed the mountain. Prior to the arrival of European ships and settlers, this region was home to a great number of Native Americans. But times had begun to change as sparsely populated coastal communities of colonists continued to move inland. One of those early settlers was named Darby Field. In 1642, after seeing the shining summit from a ship off the coast of Maine, he set out in search of his fortune, enlisting two Native American guides to accompany him into the wilds of this unknown land. Darby set out by birch bark canoe near Exeter, New Hampshire, paddled up the coast into the Saco River and up to what is now Glen, New Hampshire. After obtaining permission from the local tribal elders, Darby Field and his two companions set out on what became the first ever ascent of this formidable mountain, at least the first ever by a European. Whether he sought riches, glory, adventure, or a combination of all three, Darby and his guides achieved their quest and their place in history more than 350 years ago. However, after that epic adventure, the mountain rolled over and went back to sleep for another 150 years. It wasn't until the 1790s that the Crawford family, Abel and then Ethan after him, finally began housing guests and guiding them around Mount Washington. The family built Crawford's Inn on the southern end of the Presidential Range, in the area now known as Crawford Notch. In 1818, the inn hosted a group of visitors who arrived with the express purpose of climbing Mount Washington, and did so with the help of Ethan Crawford. Ethan's subsequent journal entry reflects the typical Yankee flair for understatement of their massive effort when he simply wrote,
"My father and I made a footpath from the notch out through the woods, and it was advertised in the newspapers, and we soon began to have a few visitors."
And nearly two centuries later, they've never stopped coming. If for nothing else, the Crawford family legacy is assured by the fact that they cut the first hiking trail up the mountain in 1819, which is still in use today and is the oldest hiking trail in America. Beyond that, the Crawfords cut the mountain's first bridle path, which incidentally later became the principal route of the Cog Railway. The history of transportation has etched itself onto the slopes of this legendary mountain. Take a moment to think again of the horse teams straining against their harnesses as the drivers spoke commands and encouragement. Horses ruled this road for the first 50 years, with the carriages and stagecoaches of that era being continuously developed and improved to cope with the harsh conditions of mountain travel.
While the first motor vehicle ascended the road in 1899, it wasn't until 1912 that the first gas-powered vehicles took over the job of carrying guests up the road. From that point on, the horse-drawn era began to fade from memory, and the carriage road eventually became the auto road. At the time, however, many traditional thinkers were not ready to acknowledge the worth of these mechanical contraptions. During this era of change, a statewide newspaper, the Manchester Union Leader, wrote, "The whole thing is an unmitigated nuisance. The lives and property of perfectly helpless people have been menaced for no reason other than to provide amusement for total strangers. Some drivers can be trusted. Most cannot. If these people think of coming up another year, let them stay in jail a couple of days, and everyone will be the better for it." The first motor vehicle that was used to carry passengers, a used Thomas Flyer, began the change in 1912, followed in 1920 by a fleet of Pierce Arrows, one of which is preserved in the Douglas A. Philbrook Red Barn Museum, next to our base lodge. These 7-passenger touring cars were extremely durable and capable vehicles, and were used until the public started wanting a more enclosed car to protect them from the weather, whereby the auto road transitioned to using Ford Woody station wagons in the late 1930s. Throughout the 1950s and 60s, international travelalls were the vehicle of choice, before transitioning to the modern 12-passenger vans that we use today. In many ways, the evolution of transportation played itself out right on the path that you now travel. With an average grade of 12%, the auto road presented a manageable challenge for each new generation of transportation technology. Mount Washington was a test track of sorts, because if a car could prove itself on these unforgiving slopes, it could work anywhere. In 1904, one of the first motorsport events in America took place here, when the Climb to the Clouds race was contested on this road for the first time. This was 7 years before the first 500-mile race at the Brickyard in Indianapolis, and 12 years prior to the inaugural Pikes Peak Hill Climb in Colorado. Climb to the Clouds has been run sporadically throughout the years, with course records being reset 23 times along the way. Many famous race car drivers and automobile manufacturers have competed in the event during its colorful history. Among them, the legendary Carroll Shelby in 1956, driving a Ferrari 375 GP. The 1904 event set the benchmark at 24 minutes, 37.6 seconds, with a stunningly fast drive by Harry Harkness in his 40-horsepower Mercedes. That equated to an average speed of about 18 miles per hour, which is fairly close to your average speed today, albeit Harry's drive was on a fully gravel road with conditions that were far less favorable than those of the current-day auto road. Fast forward to the 2017 Climb to the Clouds, where Travis Pastrana set an unbelievable time of 5 minutes, 44.72 seconds in his 600-plus horsepower factory Subaru rally car. Travis's average speed was just under 80 miles per hour, with top speeds approaching 140 miles per hour. As you drive along in your vehicle, try to imagine these two scenes in your mind. First, picture the early cars with their 15-horsepower engines straining to make the grade. And then the other extreme, the high-powered race cars of today that reach triple-digit speeds on the same turns you're negotiating right now. Throughout history, the most daring of racers have tried to capture the speed record on Mount Washington. Where horse-drawn wagons took 3 to 4 hours to make the ascent, early autos did it in just under 2 hours. The most recent racers have shaved the time to well under 6 minutes, though they don't get much of a chance to enjoy the fantastic views. If it has been clear and sunny for you here today, consider yourself lucky. The weather on Mount Washington is generally more interesting than that. It isn't just that the weather can change quickly here, it's that this mountain seems to generate its own climate and environment. Sure, the weather on the mountain generally aligns itself with the four seasons, but it overlaps them a lot more and mixes them together. Rain, snow, and sun make the rounds based more on random chance than what the calendar says. Some days there is rain in the valleys and beautiful sun on the mountain, or vice versa. Some days clouds fly by close enough to touch. Other times, an undercast develops, where a blanket of clouds shrouds the lowlands and the summits of the taller mountains protrude like islands in a sea of white. Hundreds of inches of snow fall here each year, and hurricane-force winds blow on more than a few occasions. And then there's the fog that's thick enough to chew. This and more make up what we call Mount Washington weather. It is both the diversity and extremes in the weather on this mountain that have made it a center of meteorological studies since the mid-1800s. The Hitchcock-Huntington expedition was the first to winter over on the summit in 1870. It was a remote, harsh winter wilderness, which exposed these scientists to conditions they couldn't have imagined. The U.S. Signal Corps took over from 1870 until 1892 and experienced many of the same conditions that the current members of the Mount Washington Observatory staff contend with. This journal entry from Sergeant Isaac Burke in the 1875 logbook details a difficult evening for the early observers.
January 27, 1875. Coldest of the season, 46 below. The wind is blowing a hurricane and has done so all through the night past. Hard work today to keep warm. The wind and cold penetrate every cranny. Enormous drifts have formed about the building, and as fast as the passage is cut out and the windows cleared, the wind drives in snow to fill up the gaps. The coal is far from being good and is full of rocks and clinkers. Respectfully suggest that good coal and another heating stove be purchased. If such weather as this is to continue, it would be wicked to keep men in such a dwelling.
It can be assumed that good coal and another stove weren't purchased because winter occupation ceased in 1890. It took 40 years to round up another crew of dedicated weather watchers, but in 1932, Alex McKenzie, Joe Dodge, Bob Monahan, and Sal Pagliuccia staked a new claim on the summit, and the Mount Washington Observatory began round-the-clock weather observations that still continue to this very day. Then came a day that no one expected, a day that has gone down in history and has made Mount Washington famous. It was April 12, 1934, and world record winds of 231 miles per hour blew over the summit of Mount Washington. Pagliuccia's logbook entry for that day tells the story.
"We've been taking turns knocking ice from the anemometer post. Shortly after 1 a.m., I set out to clear the ice again and disappeared into the fog on the roof. I felt the full blast of the 200 mile per hour southeast wind on my face. Kneeling on the platform, I pounded the foot-thick ice accumulation with all my strength, but alas, wasn't making much impression on the rough frost."
On that day, Mount Washington earned another place in history and was forever nicknamed the home of the world's worst weather. Because of this, various companies and scientific institutions have tested everything from jet engines to paint to winter clothing. It's because of the reliably harsh extremes of Mount Washington weather that so many different types of tests have been done here in the past and will continue to be performed in the future. In a typical year, the temperature averages 27 degrees at the summit. The winds, although averaging 35 miles per hour, exceed hurricane force on more than 100 days out of the year. The summit is in the clouds more than 60% of the time. The snowfall averages 281 inches per year, although more than 500 inches, that's more than 47 feet, fell in the winter of 1968 and 1969. Below treeline, the Great Glen Trails Outdoor Center uses the road as part of its cross-country ski trail system and runs winter tours in our specially designed Mount Washington snow coaches. So, come back this winter for an exciting journey to just above treeline for a breathtaking look at the snow-covered Presidential Range. And we'll do all the driving. Winter is a time of unimaginable beauty and deep snow. In fact, on a part of the road known as the Cragway, 20 or more feet of snow accumulates each winter. Before the days of heavy equipment, pure manpower opened up drifted parts of the road. Each spring, as the tourist season approached, the road crew, armed only with shovels, would begin to move the mountain of snow that had accumulated in certain areas. Imagine facing a wall of snow 20 feet deep and 500 feet long, knowing it was your job to break through. This is what the early road crews faced year after year. Today, the job hasn't changed, just the methods for accomplishing it. Snowcats and backhoes have taken over where men with shovels once fought the elements. But it's still a lot of work every spring to put this mountain road back in order after a harsh North Country winter. The Mount Washington Auto Road is as much a destination today as it ever was. There seems to be an almost mythical allure that draws people to the mountain's towering heights. For some, it's an opportunity to reach the top of a major mountain and then quietly contemplate the beauty and majesty of the surroundings. For others, it's a place to make history by setting a new record or breaking a previous one. This has been the case since Darby Field set out to climb Mount Washington in 1642. Each generation brings a steady stream of challengers, and the areas of endeavor are as diverse and unique as the individuals who undertake them. Here's a sample of just a few records and record breakers throughout time. 1857. A man counts his steps walking to the top. 16,925. 1861. The road opens, and Colonel Joseph Thompson drives the first horse-drawn vehicle up Mount Washington.
1875, Harland Amon runs down the road in 54 minutes. 1887, an all-time record for horse-drawn vehicles is set by Charles O'Hara with a time up of 1 hour and 9 minutes. 1899, Freeland O'Stanley drives the first automobile up the road in 2 hours and 10 minutes. 1904, Harry Harkness sets a record in the first Climb to the Clouds auto race of 24 minutes 37.6 seconds. 1907, the first recorded round trip is made on skis. 1923, the automobile hill climb record drops to 17 minutes flat, set by Ralph Mulford in a Chandler. 1924, a Harley-Davidson motorcycle ascends in 15 minutes. 1926, Arthur Walden drives the first dog team to the summit. 1932, Florence Clark becomes the first woman to drive a dog team solo to the summit. 1934, a world record wind of 231 miles per hour is recorded on the summit. 1938, an automobile record of 12 minutes 17.6 seconds is set by Lem Ladd in a Ford V8 special. 1950s, Alton Weigel of Walpole runs up the road, hikes up and down Tuckerman Ravine, and then rides the Cog Railway, a 30-mile trek, all in 14 hours. Weigel then goes on to climb the road barefoot and blindfolded, then backwards, then pushing a wheelbarrow carrying a 100-pound sack of sugar in it. 1975, an alternative energy regatta finds an odd assortment of vehicles powered by wood, steam, garbage, and chicken manure winding their way up Mount Washington. 1998, the Climb to the Clouds car race record drops to just 6 minutes 42 seconds, set by Frank Sprongel, driving an Audi Quattro. 2000, Thomas Danielson sets the still current bicycle hill climb record of 49 minutes 24 seconds. 2003, a Segway from Heritage, New Hampshire is ridden to the summit. 2004, Jonathan Wyatt set the still current foot race record of 56 minutes 41 seconds. 2010, Shawarge Amare becomes the fastest woman to run the road, setting a record time of 1 hour 8 minutes 21 seconds. 2017, Travis Pastrana shatters the Climb to the Clouds automobile record with an unimaginably quick time of just 5 minutes 44.72 seconds. Less scientific-minded have been those who have used roller skates, llamas, skateboards, and unicycles as a method to reach the top. One New Hampshire man even claims to hold the record for the most diverse array of ascents, hiking up as Darby Field in 1642 attire with Indian guides, riding up in the road's own six-horse mountain wagon, in a 1917 Pierce Arrow, a 1938 Ford Woody, a modern-day auto road van, a motorcycle, a race car, snowmobile, snowcat, snow coach, Jeep, and a convertible. It seems that every year someone shows up asking permission to use the road to be the first or the fastest at something on Mount Washington. In addition to the Climb to the Clouds race, annual events include the Mount Washington Road Race, a classic all-uphill foot race that draws a field of over 1,300 runners, the best of whom can run the grueling 7.6-mile course in under 1 hour. Cyclists also get their chance to conquer the mountain in the Mount Washington Auto Road Bicycle Hill Climb, where the current record stands at just under 50 minutes. You'll find a complete list of our upcoming events at mountwashingtonautoroad.com. You've now joined with the explorers, adventurers, competitors, climbers, families, and travelers from throughout time and around the world who have found themselves drawn to the top of this mountain, to the place the Native Americans called Agiochochuk. The memories you take with you are yours forever. Aside from the exciting drive, one of the most amazing aspects of the Mount Washington Auto Road is that it allows anyone of any age the opportunity to summit this legendary mountain. You've had the chance to sit with your friends and family, get some perspective on the world we live in from a place unlike any other. You've breathed in the cool mountain air and reflected on those who came before you and those who will come after, perhaps members of your own family. Enjoy the rest of your day and your vacation in the White Mountains. Visit us again sometime for another drive in your own vehicle or take a guided tour in one of our stages. When you reach the bottom, come across the street and take advantage of everything we offer at the Base Lodge. The Glenview Cafe has a spectacular view of the mountain you've just climbed and serves homemade soups, sandwiches, and other goodies. The Douglas A. Philbrook Red Barn Museum features horse-drawn and automotive stages on display, as well as historical memorabilia from the Auto Road's long history. If you're in the mood for some outdoor adventure, visit Great Glen Trails Outdoor Center, located on the ground floor of the base lodge. We have nearly 30 miles of trails to explore on bike or on foot, where you'll experience these magnificent surroundings in a whole different way. Bring your own bike or rent one of ours and enjoy the family-friendly trail system here at Great Glen Trails, all accessed right from the base lodge. During the winter months, these same great trails are meticulously groomed for cross-country skiing and snowshoeing and rated among the best Nordic ski areas in New England. If you're looking to spend some time on the water, the Outdoor Center offers half-day guided wildlife kayak tours on the pristine, placid waters of the Androscoggin River, just a few miles north of the Otto Road. For even more adventure, take a full day to explore the natural wonders of the Lake Umbagog National Wildlife Refuge. Our experienced and fun guides will take care of all the details, including instruction for any ability. And no vacation to the White Mountains would be complete without a stay at the Glen House Hotel. Located just north of the Otto Road entrance, the Glen House provides beautiful, eco-friendly accommodations with some of the best views in New England. Take a swim in the indoor pool, sip a cocktail in the tavern, and enjoy a great meal at the Notch Grill. And when you're ready to explore the unspoiled beauty of the Great Glen, on foot, bike, skis, or snowshoes, our family-friendly trail system is just steps from the back door. Lots more information online at theglenhouse.com. Well, that's about it. If you're not at the base area, you will be soon. We hope you've enjoyed your adventure above treeline, and thank you again for joining us today on our Road to the Sky.